Good morning. Today is Wind Energy Day at the Iowa State Capitol. We're joined by the Iowa Wind Energy Association Vice President John Borman and Doug Spoon from TPI Composites in Newton to discuss a new report demonstrating Iowa's leadership in wind energy. We also have our partners from the Iowa Wind Energy Association in the audience who will be talking later with legislators and with our office and with also visitors to the Capitol about growing wind energy even further in the state of Iowa. As you know, I've been an enthusiastic supporter of wind energy and renewable energy since 1983, when I signed the very first renewable electric generation standard. Now, over 20 other states have copied our law. Perhaps the most important impact wind has had on our state are the high-quality, good-paying jobs that are helping grow family incomes across the state. But wind also has helped us reduce our dependency on coal and other non-renewable resources, something that we've gone from being almost exclusively reliant on coal and also on foreign oil for our vehicle fuel back in the 1980s to today. We are a leader. We're a leader in ethanol. We're a leader in biodiesel. And we're obviously the nation's leader when it comes to wind energy. Iowa now leads the country with 36% of our state electricity coming from wind. And we're on track to exceed 40% by the year 2020. The two historic projects by Alliant and MidAmerica equal nearly $5 billion in projected investments and are larger than any of the previous capital investments we've seen in our state. Wind energy has proven that the right policies can help create good jobs, spur economic development, and grow our manufacturing sector as well. Innovation in wind energy is helping to improve efficiency and lower production costs as well. Wind is now a key and growing component of our nation's energy future. Wind energy supplies 5.5% of the U.S. electricity compared to the 36% in Iowa today, and the U.S. Department of Energy says that our country is on track to supply 10% of its electricity from wind by the year 2020, whereas Iowa is going to be at 40%. The new data released by Navigant Consulting says that by 2020, additional wind growth can create almost 250,000 wind-related jobs in America. I'd like now to ask Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds, who's been a leader in this, to tell you more about what the Navigant report found on job creation here in the state of Iowa.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Governor Branstad. And as the chair of the Iowa Energy Plan, and as the governor and I travel to all 99 counties and meet with business and industry, we've certainly heard firsthand from not only, as I indicated, existing, but prospective companies, how important it is to have clean, renewable, and reliable sources of energy, just like wind. Companies like Facebook, Google, and Microsoft, and many others have expressed how critical renewable energy has been in their decision to locate here in Iowa. I just recently had the opportunity to meet with Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, at the Altoona facility, and she specifically told me how important wind energy is to their data centers and how important that was in their decision to locate in Iowa. And I know Governor Branstad just had the opportunity to meet with Eric Schmidt from Google, and he also reiterated the same thing when he visited the Council Bluffs facility. By attracting business with sound policy, our economy has benefited from wind energy by creating jobs and attracting billions of private investment in the state of Iowa. $11.8 billion has already been invested in wind power in Iowa, and it's helping to pay for new schools, hospitals, roads, and bridges. But the analysis conducted by the American Wind Energy Association on the Navigant report shows that an additional $9 billion in economic activity is possible by the year 2020. Currently, around 9,000 Iowans work in the wind industry, including industrial workers at 11 different wind manufacturing facilities like TPI Composites. But again, the analysis of the Navigant report found that wind-related jobs can reach 11,500 direct and indirect jobs by 2020 in Iowa. So if you consider induced jobs or jobs related as a result of development of wind, that number raises to 17,300 wind-related jobs. Wind pays Iowa farmers over $20 million a year in land lease payments, allowing them to expand their operations or send their kids to college. An expected growth of wind in Iowa will result in $370 million in income, sales, and property tax payments, again by 2020. It's undeniable Governor Branstad's leadership in the renewable industry, especially with wind, and I think you can tell when he gets very excited about talking about the leadership role that Iowa plays and where we're going to be by 2020. So I want to take this opportunity to share with our job creators in the wind energy industry that we certainly will continue to pursue these policies that have benefited our economy, that has created jobs, and helped Iowa become the leader that we are. And with that, I'd like to invite John with the Iowa Wind Energy Association to say a few words.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you, Governor. I'm very pleased with the growth of the wind industry in the state of Iowa. So just look at where we're at. So over 36% of our state's electricity is powered by wind energy. So sounds like an easy number to say, but think about it. 36%, nearly over one-third of our power from wind in the state of Iowa. It's amazing. So Governor Branstad, your long-term support were instrumental to getting us to where we are today. Lieutenant Governor, your continued efforts as our future governor will help take our state to the next level. In my travel through the state of Iowa, I have personally met with county supervisors who want to see more investment in rural Iowa. I've spoken to school officials who see the positive benefits adding to their tax base. Officials and residents in Iowa are happy to see these jobs right here in Iowa and enjoy the positive economic benefit these projects have on rural communities. Iowa is also a powerhouse in training new energy workers. Students in community college training programs like in Estherville at Iowa Lakes Community College, which is a national leader in technician training. Right here in the Des Moines area at DMAC in Ankeny. Other programs such as those are helping students enter the fastest growing job category, wind turbine technician. PhD students in Ames at Iowa State University are on the leading edge of research in wind turbine design. We have built an industry and an educational support structure that has diversified our economy and provides good paying jobs around the state. And with that, I'd like to introduce Doug Spoon, General Manager of TPI Iowa.
Thanks, John, for the introduction. So my name is Doug Spoon. I'm the General Manager at TPI Composites in Newton, Iowa. We've seen just a steady increase in demand for our products over the last last 8 years. We are the largest, or the world's largest independent wade manufacturer. And we've seen our employment increase to over 1,100 good-paying wind jobs in the last, like I said, 8 years. So we'd like to thank Governor Branstad for his vision and perseverance to make Iowa the nation's largest wind energy provider, along with our other state legislators that have had a huge part in making this happen. And I also look forward to working with Lieutenant Governor Reynolds over the next few years to continue Iowa's dominance in the wind energy market. Thank you.
Okay. We'd open it for questions on this subject first.
Does the Trump administration's plan to dismantle the clean energy initiative from the Obama administration hurt wind energy or renewables in general?
Well, I disagree with the premise of your question because I have had some really good discussions with the leaders of the key agencies that are going to be overseeing this, the new director of the EPA, Mr. Pruitt, and also Rick Perry, who's the new director of the Energy Department. I would also point out that Texas is also a big wind energy state. And I also know that Donald Trump told Mr. Pruitt directly, you will be supportive of ethanol, because renewable energy and the support for ethanol and biodiesel in Iowa was very important. So I believe that what we have in place, the RFS and also the wind energy tax credit, which, as you know, is being phased down over a period of, I think, 4 or 5 years, are going to continue. And those have been very beneficial to the state of Iowa. And Senator Grassley and our congressional delegation has been very supportive of it. That's a totally different issue. And he's already taken. Well, first of all, the war on coal is over. I agree with that. But the commitment to renewable energy continues. And we're going to continue to build on the tremendous progress and success we've made with renewable energy, working with this administration. And Rick Perry and Mr. Pruitt and the other key people understand how important this is, and we're proud of the progress we've made. We got a commitment out of Mr. Pruitt that we're not only going to keep the RFS, but they're going to make those decisions timely, unlike what happened during the Obama administration, which they delayed and delayed and created great uncertainty, and we didn't see the expansion and growth. I recently met with people from the Renewable Energy Association, and they were telling me how they're expanding biodiesel production in Iowa as well. So I was a leader in this, and our state energy plan calls for us to continue to move forward on all of these clean energy issues, wind being one that we are clearly the national leader on, and it's made a big difference in our state, as you've heard, and we're going to continue to do all that we can, and we have great bipartisan support from our congressional delegation and from the administration.
In regards to the wind energy tax credit specifically,
right.
Because when President Trump was in Newton for a forum, he didn't express wholehearted support for it.
Well, that was before the election, and as I said, we've had significant discussions with him since the election, and in fact,
this will be part of the tax plan that they come up with?
Well, I think it's important that we keep these incentives that have made a real difference. And I can tell you the Iowa congressional delegation has made it very clear of their strong support for this. Grassley has been, you know, you might say, the father of wind energy. If you saw his commercial, he climbed to the top of the tallest wind tower in Iowa to take credit for the leadership that he's provided in this. And I know Grassley well. He's going to fight real hard to see that we protect the progress that we've made in wind energy, and he is a key and influential member of the Senate. So I know there are those that would like to undo some of the things that have been done, but I feel confident it's going to be maintained, and I think that President Trump recognizes how important renewable energy was to his victory here in Iowa and the heartland. My son, who is now a senior White House liaison to the Department of Commerce, led the effort with the Renewable Energy Alliance, which was a bipartisan group to educate candidates on these issues. And so I think we made great progress, and we want to continue to build on that success. And wind energy is only a part of it, but it's an important and significant part of it. It's made a real difference in our state, and we're excited and proud of it, and that's why we're pleased to partner with the the wind energy people today and highlight the progress and the success that we expect in the future as well. Are there questions on this subject? Yes. Well, I want to exhaust the questions on this one first, and then we'll be glad to answer other questions.
Hey, Doug, for what are your concerns long-term as you all look to expand? What's holding you back?
You want to come up, Doug?
So, we continue to look for the right locations to build our factories. I think the production tax credit expiring is something we want to keep in the forefront. And then also, if there's any taxes along some of the imported goods that come up. So we want to keep both those in the forefront.
Other questions? Okay, we'll go on to other issues then.
Governor, could you tell us what's going on with Medicaid management? As you're aware, some legislators told us last week, they're Republican legislators, that they're caught completely off guard, that you're going to be giving additional money to these companies. They're faced with a tight budget, and they feel like they've been put in a difficult position. Could you tell us what's going on here?
Well, first of all, managed care for Medicaid, I think, has made a real difference. It saved over $110 million in this fiscal year. It's well over, I think, $220 million in next fiscal year. If we hadn't had the courage to do this, despite the criticism from some, they would have a much bigger budget problem. We've been assured there's going to be no increase in the costs in this fiscal year or the next fiscal year. We have partnered with the MCOs on this. Your paper predicted they're going to make all kinds of money on this, and now they're predicting that they're going to have huge losses. This approach that we've developed means that if they do have significant profits, the Iowa taxpayers will share in it. If they have significant losses in the future, the state and federal government will share in it. We're in this as partners. We're focusing on things to improve people's health and to provide more prevention, and thereby, we think, help people to live longer and healthier lives, but also to reduce the cost of Medicaid as well.
Does this throw the state budget then into red?
No. It has no impact on the state budget in this year or the next year.
So you're going to pay 2 years from now the $10 million?
Well, first of all, we don't know how much, and we don't know at the future date whether there will be a gain or a loss. If there is a gain over a certain amount, then they will share that with us by rebating that to Iowa. If there is a loss above a certain amount, then there will be a sharing with the federal and state government in that. But that would be well into the future. It's has no impact in this fiscal year or next year's budget.
Governor, the contracts that were released last week were just for this fiscal year. Do you expect that this risk corridor arrangement will be renewed for future years?
Well, first of all, the risk corridor agreement is something that CMS has encouraged and something that other states have done. So we expect that the federal government will approve this. Seema Verma, who is now the director of CMS, is the one that worked with us on managed care as well as the Iowa Health and Wellness Plan. So we have somebody that we trust and that we think is really somebody that's got good judgment and expertise and knowledge in this area, and the impact we think is really very fair, because it protects the taxpayers in the event that they do make a profit over and above a certain amount, then we will share in that. If they have a loss over and above a certain amount, the federal and state government will share in that.
So you think this arrangement will go forward? Yeah, because the ones that were signed were just for this fiscal year. It didn't go forward.
Well, again, we're partners in this, and we're going to continue to work with the MCOs with regard to what makes the most sense going forward, and looking at the experience and how it can be perfected and improved as we go forward.
Lieutenant Governor, the
Well, I think that was somewhat taken out of context. What I want to say working with the MCOs and what I have consistently said is we want to make sure that this is sustainable and that we can provide predictability to Iowans and to the managed care program. It's important to make sure that we continue with coordinated, patient-centered health care. They play a big role in helping us manage and coordinate care with Iowans, especially those most in need, and so we're going to continue to work with them in partnership. I think this is a good, as the governor indicated, a good guardrail as we're only 1 year into it, barely 1 year into it, as we continue to move forward. That helps us monitor the program to make sure that it's fair to both Iowans, Iowa taxpayers, and the managed care providers. And so that's what we're going to continue to do. And that's what I've consistently said to them, is we want to work in partnership. We want to make sure that, you know, they're able to continue providing the services that they are in multiple other states. And we want to continue that same partnership.
Do you expect them to need significantly more state money
next year? Well, I'm not going to, you know, guess on that. I'm not going to weigh in. We put a program in place. We're waiting on CMS to okay that. That is something that they've encouraged other states to do. As Governor Branstad indicated, there's other states that have done that. And so we anticipate that being okayed, and then we'll move forward and adjust as we need to. So I'm not going to speculate on what that looks like. That would be wrong to do that. We're going to continue to work with them in partnership and in good faith, as I believe they are with us.
No. First of all, let me say, you know, we're not going to go back to an old system that had an error rate nearly 10%, in which the taxpayers would have been on the hook for an additional $110 million this year, and I think $223 million in the next fiscal year. That's not something that makes any sense. Other states have not done that. 39 other states have gone to this, and so we're going to do everything we can, working in partnership with the MCOs to deliver the best quality health care we can, and especially encouraging things like health risk assessments and things that can encourage people to prevent these chronic diseases that are so expensive and really cause people's health to go downhill.
Right, that's the key.
Well, you'll get a chance to see that in the next couple of days, but it's not an easy situation. We anticipate using $131 million from the cash reserve in the short term, but paying that back over the biennium, and that means that the 2018 fiscal year budget, it's going to be a very difficult, a tight budget. But we worked with the legislature on the de-appropriations that were necessary for 2017. We intend to work with them on this for the fiscal year 2018 and 19. 19's a little better. If you recall, we had a significant balance at the end of fiscal year 2019, and so we think that 18 is going to be difficult, but 19 is going to be, I think, a lot better. Well, first of all, I have nothing to add to this case, and the Attorney General's office, which has been handling the case on our behalf, felt that this would be really a waste of my time, and consequently, I'm pleased with both the Attorney General's office representation and also the judge's decision. Well, I guess, you know, he wants to say that I should not be able to answer questions at press conferences. You know, I've had a tradition and history of always giving you honest answers to the questions you had. I have not tried to say anything derogatory or negative about anybody. But when somebody from the press asks me a question, I always try to give you a direct and honest answer. And that's what that was. That's all that was. So that's the whole case against me, is that I gave an honest answer at a press conference. I guess that's as it is.
Governor, the IPERS, as you're aware, made some decisions. The IPERS board made some decisions Friday that are going to change the economic assumptions, meaning that they will have an additional unfunded liability of $1.3 billion. And in order to pay for that, they would need to increase contributions by approximately 1 percentage point of covered payroll, which would require increased contributions by both the state and local governments, and by employees. And I think Gretchen Tegler estimated the first year cost of like $70 million and over 20 years, $22 billion. Are you going to support that, or should something else be done?
Well, first of all, I want to compliment the IPERS board on making a thoughtful and prudent decision. Too many states have overestimated the revenue in their pension funds, and the result are in big trouble. And we've seen what's happened with many cities. We see what happened in the neighboring state of Illinois, and it's happened in many other states around this country. When I left office back in 1999, it was 100% funded. But you know, we've gone through some challenging times since then, and the revenue growth, return on investment for the IPERS fund has not kept pace with what it did in the 80s and 90s. So I think it's appropriate and correct that they made this change. And that obviously has consequences, and that's all the more reason why we have to be careful and prudent on the way we spend money. And we also, I think, need to look at the long-term benefits of making some changes in the whole system. But we also, in doing so, as we review and look to the future, as many private sector businesses have long since done, and now many other states and local governments are doing, it needs to be done in a way that protects those people that are relying on the IPERS retirement system, and ensure them that it's not going to impact them or the commitment that was made to them when they joined the system.
Last question over here.
So yeah. Well, first of all, I think it's important that the law be followed. There was a reform that was passed in the year 2010, and that is the law that, unless the legislature that law restricted, I think it made a number of changes, both on the side of benefits and also on contributions. And obviously, that's something the legislature can review. But it was correct and prudent to make those decisions. And obviously, that is the law today that we need to abide by.
Last question, Barbara.
Yes. I think we had one. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was disappointed that they weren't able to reach an agreement, but I've said from the beginning that Obamacare is unaffordable and unsustainable. I think that's becoming more and more obvious in state after state. I was pleased with the leadership that we have now in the Department of Health and Human Services with Dr. Price and also with Seema Verma and their willingness to work with us. We did get a waiver out of the previous CMS director. We think we'll have even more flexibility under this one, and I'm hopeful that eventually they'll come back to the need to repeal and replace and reform Obamacare in a way that's going to bring down premiums and make it a more competitive and sustainable health care system for all Americans.
Governor, the legislature is finalizing this preemption bill that would ban local governments from increasing the minimum wage above the state wage. We asked House leadership a little bit about it in terms of what the chances were for raising the minimum wage this year, and House leadership indicated that there just wasn't, within the caucus, that just wasn't something they were interested in doing. I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, I understand the interest in having a uniform minimum wage throughout the state. I support that. I think not having that creates a lot of uncertainty and a lot of problems. But I would prefer that we consider a modest increase over time in a minimum wage, as some of our neighboring states have done.
This year?
Well, again, it's the art of what is possible, and we want to work with the legislature to see what can be accomplished. Thank you very much. Oh, yeah, we've had discussions about this, and I've indicated my support for a modest increase over time in the minimum wage. So we've had those discussions with legislative leaders over time.
Well, we're going to continue to look at that. My priority, honestly, is I want to make sure that it doesn't have a negative impact on job growth across the state of Iowa. We are focused on getting Iowans the skills that they need to fill the jobs that are open today, let alone the jobs of tomorrow. There are phenomenal jobs available all across the state of Iowa, and we have Iowans that are unemployed and underemployed that we need to help get the skills to fill the jobs. And then we're not talking about minimum wage. We're talking about quality careers for Iowans.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot.